Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Uprising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address problems instead of just defending positions. There's a telling quote I ran across. I had to recheck it several times, purportedly by Ronald Reagan CIA Director William Casey, and I quote, "We will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false," unquote. But that's it for a second. So if you're confused about what is true in the age of COVID-19, relax. It's part of the plan. At a time when we have a pathologically blatant liar in the White House, a corporate media that cannot be trusted, and Google, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter deplatforming dissenting opinions at the behest of the powers that be in power, who or what are we to believe? And how do we practice discernment? Well, our guest this week, Mark Crispin Miller, I call him a voice in the bewilderness because his views bridge and transcend the established left and right narratives. And he takes on issues such as fixed elections, the controversy over vaccines, and media censorship. Mark Crispin Miller earned his bachelor's degree from Northwestern University in 1971 and his doctorate in English from Johns Hopkins in 1977. He's currently a professor of media, culture, and communication at NYU. He is the author of several books, including The Bush Dyslexicon, Observations on a National Disorder, Cruel and Unusual, Bush-Cheney's New World Order, and Fooled Again, The Real Case for Electoral Reform. He is also the editor of The Forbidden Bookshelf, I like that, Forbidden Bookshelf, an ebook series that revives important works now out of print, most of which were variously killed at birth. He also wrote the introduction to the 2004 edition of Edward Bernays' classic book, Propaganda. He's also editor currently of News from the Underground. Welcome, Mark.
It's nice to be with you, Steve.
You know, I first heard about you back in the early 2000s when you wrote a sharp and quite entertaining book about the Bush Dyslexicon, called The Bush Dyslexicon. I thought it was really funny and sharp. It was a bit edgy, but still it was inside the box of what's acceptable fare for mainstream media. But then a few years later, you came out with your book, Fooled Again, about the stolen elections in 2000 and 2004, and all of that changed. So tell us about how the Fooled Again book came about and what the response was to this book.
Yeah, well, let me preface this by saying that the Bush Dyslexicon actually achieved bestseller status in the summer of 2001. And in fact, I was actually on MSNBC at 9 p.m., this is prime time, to talk about the book on 9/10/2001, okay? So what happened it's worth going into because it kind of gives a foretaste of the rest of my experience. All of a sudden, this book was practically an arrestable offense, you know, as the crisis precipitated by 9/11 turned Bush overnight, you know, transformed him from Bozo the Clown into Winston Churchill, as you may remember. He was suddenly revered, you know, and exalted by a population that it was, you know, outraged and terrified by the attack on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. So I, you know, I didn't really learn the proper lesson from this experience because I then continued to do work on that administration and specifically, as you note, on their status as not as elected president and vice president, but as installed president and vice president. Neither time were Bush Cheney actually elected, neither in 2000 or 2004. And this struck me as, you know, a sufficiently important subject to merit close scrutiny, a lot of careful sourcing. And I got a major publisher to do the book, Basic Books. Mm-hmm. And we all thought, you know, they at the publishing house and I and my agent, we all thought this book is going to, you know, really make a difference. It's going to jumpstart a crucial national discussion of the urgent need for radical reform of our election system, you know, which is this is not hyperbole. It is the worst in the developed world. I mean, this is an academic verdict from Harvard University and the University of Sydney. They co-produce a survey of voting systems worldwide every couple of years, and the United States is 26th out of 26. So, as I say, I had high hopes for this book. It contains a lot of eye-opening information, and to my astonishment, the book was blacked out. I mean, looking back on it, it wasn't astonishing at all, but I didn't realize then, as I have learned since, that there's a long roster of topics that are actually taboo, not fit for polite discussion or any discussion by our free press. The most surprising part of the reception of that book was not so much the blackout on it by, you know, the New York Times and the networks and so on, but the fact that it was actually attacked by leftist outlets, left liberal outlets, like The Nation, Mother Jones, TomPaine.com. So while it was blacked out by the corporate media, it was actually poo-pooed, dismissed as conspiracy theory by outlets that I'd written for many times myself, sometimes written by people who were kind of friends of mine. So it was a very weird experience, and I guess you could say it was kind of a life-changing experience because I began to focus directly on that kind of thing from then on, you know, the marginalization, the dismissal of inconvenient information, dissonant opinion as conspiracy theory.
You know, last year I had a very interesting guest, Reverend Chuck Baldwin. I don't know if you know him, but he's very, very conservative, one of the founders of Christian Coalition, et cetera, who was hip to George Bush back in the early 2000s and is hip to Trump at this point. Can I ask him, why was it that so many evangelicals went for Trump and so few like him didn't? You know, and he couldn't really answer that question, but I think it had a lot to do with what he said. It had a lot to do with perceived status and how people would lose their status if they all of a sudden put on the tinfoil hat and went over to the other side. And I'm just wondering, your colleagues, you know, there were a lot of journalists who were working in 2004, and yet you were the one, there weren't competing books. there were competing books about stolen elections. There had to be some reason why you picked up on it, and literally nobody else did.
Well, a few people did. I mean, they're like Steve Freeman wrote an excellent book on the theft of that election. Its release was a little bit belated. We had problems with his publisher, I think. And Bob Fitrakis and Harvey Wasserman brought out a book on Ohio.
Yeah.
There were other books, which of course kind of confirms my position, in as much as a number of very careful researchers found abundant evidence that election had been stolen. But you see, and what I'm about to say actually pertains to the crisis we're living through right now. It doesn't really matter what the evidence is. It doesn't matter how copious it is. It doesn't matter how solid it is. It doesn't matter how unimpeachable your sources are. It doesn't matter how compelling your argument. None of this makes any difference against a kind of an endless tidal wave of propaganda that succeeds by telling people what they want to hear, you know? So those evangelicals who fell for Trump for a number of reasons. You know, status anxiety was, I'm sure, one of them. But he was able to push their buttons in a way that they found irresistible. And the process is identical on the other side of the ideological divide, you know. Try to tell a faithful reader of the New York Times or an avid viewer of Rachel Maddow's show, try to tell them that there's not a shred of evidence to back the Russiagate conspiracy theory, and they'll look at you like you're crazy, or they'll look at you like you're a Trump supporter, you're a Nazi, you're a brown shirt, and so on. That's what we're really dealing with here. We're dealing with the power of propaganda to confirm people in views that they prefer to hold. And they take a certain pride in feeling informed enough to cling to that view. When you present them with a great deal of counter evidence, it's as if to say to them, you really don't know what you're talking about. You know, and all the reading and viewing you've done to affirm the view you prefer to hold has been a waste of time. That makes people feel insulted, and it attacks their sense of being, you know, in the know. I mean, there are a number of psychological reasons for this, but the fact is that if we don't overcome our differences, and this is the premise of your show, I mean, in general, we're really screwed, you know, because it's a long-standing imperial strategy to divide and conquer. It goes all the way back to the Romans, and we're living with it today, you know.
Exactly. It's exactly what has happened. And, you know, it's funny, you know, people on the progressive side, because they're so formally educated, they really think that they know the facts, and they don't often question where are these facts coming from. I remember back with questioning the 9/11, the official 9/11 story. I talked about it, and I had somebody say to me, "Well, if it were an inside job, we would have heard about it on NPR."
That takes my breath away. Well, actually, you know, that's the basis for a very pertinent observation, which is that the conspiracy theory meme, you know, the use of that phrase to marginalize or dismiss inconvenient information, it didn't happen naturally. That is to say, the press did not naturally and spontaneously start using that epithet, conspiracy theorist, to make sure that others would not pay attention to what that person's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, I looked into this very carefully after I was called a conspiracy theorist for marshaling the evidence that the 2004 election had been stolen. It was through, you know, careful historical study that I found out that the phrase conspiracy theory used in that way was actually weaponized by the CIA in 1967 when a number of books questioning the Warren Report had come out. Some of them were bestsellers, especially Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment. CIA memo 1035-960, if anyone wants to look it up because it's online, was sent to station chiefs worldwide, CIA station chiefs all over the world, with instructions for getting their propaganda assets and friends in the media to attack the work of these conspiracy theorists. And it also included five, today we would call them talking points, but five arguments to be used to shoot down these highly rational and well-argued critiques of the Warren Report. One of them, and I think it's the hardiest one, it's the one we hear most often, is, well, if there were a conspiracy, somebody would have talked by now, okay? That's basically what you're telling me somebody said to you about 9/11. If it were true, NPR would have broken the story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, NPR has been called national propaganda radio for a good reason. You know, it's not in the least bit impartial or given to any kind of serious investigation. But the fact of the matter is that that line about someone inevitably spilling the beans is just false. I mean, we know from the Manhattan Project, I think there were something like 100,000 people working on that thing for years, and nobody spilled the beans. Nobody talked to the press. You know, people were under a kind of military discipline. The project was highly compartmentalized, you know. There are ways to ensure the silence of accomplices. So it is simply not true that someone would have talked by now. And on top of that, there are actually examples of some people trying to talk about things like the Kennedy assassination, I mean the first one, for example, and they, you know, were variously silenced, you know, so
yep.
Most people and, don't know about them.
And dead people don't talk, we find out, and that,
yeah,
that was one of the
right.
things that happened. We're taking a break. We'll be back very shortly with Mark Christopher Miller talking about our current world situation. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or two arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
We're back on Wiki Politiki with our guest, Mark Crispin Miller. Mark, thank you so much for the exact specific reference to the CIA memo that essentially weaponized conspiracy theory. Well, we're at a point right now, as you heard on a little commercial here, we're facing the COVID-19 crisis, and that's one that potentially impacts every human on the planet, and yet we're living in different realities, so to speak. I know that this is really a massively complex question, but how do we discern the likeliest story? It's a huge question, but what's the process for actually figuring out what's so and what's not so?
Well, it would be nice if we had a free press, as opposed to the mighty Wurlitzer that's always playing wherever we go and wherever we look. I've been a media critic for decades, and I've lived through, as you have, some pretty tough times and some pretty startling crises, but I have never seen anything like this as far as censorship goes. Strictly speaking, censorship involves government control. What we have are privately owned platforms and privately owned media participating avidly with the state to make dissident or even alternative points of view on basic scientific and medical questions invisible and inaudible to most people. It is really amazing what you can no longer talk about. Now, this process was already getting much, much worse and more alarming well before the onset of this pandemic crisis. But what we're living through now threatens to be so total that we really have to start thinking seriously about actively seeking out alternative venues, alternative forums, because you'd never know, for example, that there are a number of very well-credentialed, serious epidemiologists, biostatisticians, biowarfare experts all over the world who take strong issue with the lockdown policy. For medical and psychological as well as economic reasons. You simply wouldn't know this. It's a little bit like the blackout after 9/11 on the consensus worldwide among security experts that the attacks on 9/11 should have been treated by the U.S. government as a crime and not as an act of war. This, as I say, was a consensus all over the world, but you wouldn't know that from watching CNN or reading the New York Times. Well, something like that is happening now, but I think it's much more dire now because this lockdown policy is having catastrophic consequences for all of us. For every percentage point that the unemployment rate rises, there are, I can't remember the exact figure, but there are deaths, I think, in the six figures. We have already read of some studies noting a spike in the suicide rate because of the lockdowns. Deaths from medical neglect and despair, even mere loneliness, have, started to climb. If you try to talk about this or quote the relevant experts to this effect, you're very likely to be attacked as a Trump supporter. I mean, this refers back to that kind of, mental disability you and I were discussing earlier in the show, that, if what you say goes against the accepted wisdom within your tribe, you must belong to the enemy tribe, people seem mm-hmm. to have a hard time just trying to examine the material on its own factual and scientific merits. I'm not really succeeding in answering your question other than to say that we have to really break out of the box that we're all in, whether they're, we're conservatives or liberals, and you know, try to listen to what real experts have to say, because the fact is that we know very little for sure about what's happening. But we do, I hope, know enough to know that we don't know what we're talking about half the time, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and I think that, that's part of the complexity of what's happened, is that everything has been boiled down to very simple narratives, like the old George Bush thing, you're either with us or against us. And that's been adopted. The more fear is put into the system, the more people go into their hindbrains, and the less susceptible they are to any kind of reason, and so on. Now, on the COVID note, you are the one who first drew my attention to the Plandemic video with whistleblower Dr. Judith Mikovits. And of course, when finally it was taken down off of YouTube, probably dozens of times now, and people keep putting it back up there, which is a really good sign, right?
Right. No, it is a good sign.
Yeah, there's been a lot of pushback. Forbes did a piece on it and all of that. And these are the pieces that people who want to believe the mainstream story will refer to. You sent this thing out, and you said that this is a very, very important piece. We can talk about the French scientist, the piece that you sent out yesterday. And by the way, you are one of the few actually working journalists out there who are coming up with things, with information that's real information that people are not getting from other sources. So I want to give you kudos for that. But let's talk about Plandemic. What in your mind is the most pertinent point that she makes, that you, maybe you can lay out the story just a little bit for the people that don't know the story?
Yeah, well, I guess what I should focus on is that aspect of her story that's been most ferociously attacked as a lie. I have to say, parenthetically, I've never seen such a piling on by the media as I've seen in her case. I mean, it was pretty bad when Andrew Wakefield was attacked throughout the media for his study demonstrating that, no, actually, all of his study in that medical journal said was that he had noted a correlation between the MMR vaccine and autism in certain patients, and that that correlation was grounds for further study. That's actually all he said. And for this, his reputation was tarnished, his medical career destroyed, and he was defined as a public menace in a way that kind of anticipates what we're seeing now. But what, you know, as bad as it was, what Wakefield went through pales in comparison with what Judy Mikovits is going through at the moment, as it seems that every major media outlet out there is basically warning people away from watching Plandemic, and, you know, claiming that all of her revelations are false. In fact, none of them are false. She tells the story, and here I'm finally answering your specific question. She talks about her experience with Dr. Fauci and his persistent interest in gain-of-function studies of viruses, which is actually a way to weaponize viruses. And she believed that she was doing this kind of research under his aegis as a preventive measure, as a way to help to develop some kind of vaccine or cure for these extremely dangerous viruses that were being modified. And she found out that Dr. Fauci was interested in pursuing this kind of research with other purposes in mind. So they basically trumped up a case against her having stolen some research materials. He slapped her with a gag order. She spent some time in jail. And anyone who reads what appears to be a work debunking her story should at least take the trouble to watch Plandemic in which she tells her own story, and then people should make up their minds accordingly. That's just one of the things she talks about. She's also not a believer in masks. She talks about the importance of strengthening our immune systems as the best defense against, opportunistic pathogens like this one. So she's actually one of many very reputable doctors and researchers who have raised serious questions about the entire program that we're living under now. And I don't just mean the program of lockdown, sheltering in place, which, as I said earlier, is having catastrophic consequences for far more people than the number killed or reportedly killed by COVID-19. I just drew a blank. What was I saying?
Well, you were talking about the overall picture.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's not just the lockdowns. It's also, for example, the use of ventilators to treat seriously ill COVID-19 patients. One of the things I sent my list was a video made by an ER physician in Brooklyn named Dr. Cameron Kyle Seidel, who was the first to notice that ventilators seem to be having the effect of killing the people on them. The mortality rate of those patients on ventilators is north of 90%. He realized that there was something very strange about this disease, that it does not seem to involve insufficient lung capacity, but rather what we call hypoxia, which has to do with capacity of your red blood cells to carry oxygen. What he was witnessing in his patients at Maimonides Medical Center was something more like high altitude sickness. He'd really never seen anything like it, and he spoke quite adamantly against the use of ventilators as the last thing that you should do with these patients suffering from COVID-19. And I should add parenthetically that an old and dear friend of mine who teaches here at NYU caught the virus, was sick for a week with it, and finally his doctor at Mount Sinai said to him, you have two choices. Either you can go on a ventilator, in which case you will definitely die, or you can choose not to go on a ventilator, in which case you'll have a 5% chance of pulling through. Luckily, he took the second option.
Yeah.
And did miraculously pull through. He's 85 years old, but he's still with us. That's just a little personal confirmation of what Dr. Kyle Seidel has said, that the use of ventilators is great if you want to kill people, but not so great if you want them to survive. And there are similar questions to be raised about healthy people sheltering in place, healthy people walking around outside wearing masks, you know. That tends to lower one's immunity as well. It also has damaging psychological and social effects. The whole notion of quarantining healthy people, I think, is unprecedented. I think this is the first time we've lived through a pandemic during which healthy people have to be, locking themselves in, creeping out into the street with masks and gloves on and so on. Among other things, it's worked very, very efficiently to completely abort any kind of public assembly for the purposes of protest. And we can't help but wonder, at least I can't help but wonder, whether this might not have been part of the strategy. In December of 2019, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting did a kind of summary article on how the press had been blacking out protest movements that were springing up all over the world, you know, Cameroon, Lebanon, Honduras, Chile, Mexico, the United States, the Bernie movement, the Yellow Vest in France. Fair called this, they said, 2019 will go down in history as the year of the mass protest. Well, you might say that this sheltering in place ideology is just what the doctor ordered, if the doctor is Dr. Fauci, if you see what I mean.
You know, it's funny, but now we can talk about masked protests. You know, and one of the protests, in fact, was the anti-mandatory vaccination protest in New Jersey that happened late last year that caused them to be unable to railroad that bill through the legislature. And I don't think people really understand, you know, I'm in California. In California, all children going to any kind of school, including daycare, have to be vaccinated. And, you know, again, I didn't know much about this. You have really helped me when you told me about the back in 2016 when Vaxxed, the movie Vaxxed, was booted out of the Tribeca Film Festival. I went and did some research on it. I also interviewed Del Bigtree, who is the producer of that movie. And I've watched the documentary series, The Truth About Vaccinations. Many, many doctors who are not anti-vaccination, by the way, being interviewed and talking about their qualms about the numbers of vaccinations, the toxicity in the vaccinations, and the tremendous amount of money. And also the repressed studies of anything that that indicate that there might be any harm to this. You know, so I think that this is really, I think, ironically, I think because of the censorship, I really see that people are becoming more aware of the censorship and are slowly, on my progressive friends, are slowly starting to ask, and why are these things being censored? What don't they want us to know?
Right.
And I'm watching people, you know, people are waking up, hopefully a little more, bit more quickly. Okay, we'll be back. We got to go take a commercial break. We'll be back for our final segment with Mark Crispin Miller, talking about our current lockdown, communications lockdown. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hi, this is Steve Behrman. I'm back with Mark Crispin Miller. We're talking about how information is seeping through the
seeping out the edges, even as the powers that be in power are trying to repress it. You know, when I was writing my book with Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution, there were a few questions that I had. We were at the last day of getting our sources, getting our footnotes and all of that together. And it was quite a stressful time. And there were a couple of things I didn't know what the sources were for my references to Edward Bernays and his book Propaganda. And lo and behold, I realized, oh my God, Mark Christopher Miller, my friend Mark Christopher Miller, had written the introduction to the 2004 version of this book. And I think that given the Orwellian condition that we seem to be in right now, knowing about Bernays and this book seems to be more important than ever. So perhaps you can relate what he started more than 90 years ago to the ways of manufactured consent that we're experiencing right now.
Yeah, well, that's an important question. I mean, it seems to me that the fundamental problem that's facing all of us, and it's certainly been the main point we've been tacitly making throughout this conversation, is that propaganda works, and that it also kills, you know. I mean, what you don't know can hurt you. When we live in a system as tightly controlled as ours is, we run the risk of losing our not just our health and our incomes and so on, but our very lives. You know, I mean, this is a matter of life and death, what we're now living through. We're living at a moment when some really shady characters are being hailed and exalted as oracles, you know, as great saviors of humankind. The fact that Bill Gates would be treated this way is really terrifying to anyone who knows his background and his real interests. This is a guy both of whose parents are diehard eugenicists, and Gates himself has always been a kind of eugenicist zealot. This is someone who has spoken in the past of what he has called the golden billion, which is his ideal population figure for the entire world. He has said explicitly many times that vaccines will do a great deal to help lower global population. Now, the way he puts this is, you know, in propaganda terms, quite clever, because his line is that if enough people in the third world are vaccinated, they won't have the same incentive to have a whole lot of children, because their children won't die of childhood diseases, you know, as prolifically as they had been without vaccines. Well, that sounds very nice and everything, but the fact is that Gates's record with vaccines has had a very sinister kind of eugenicist tilt to it. Something like 500,000 Kenyan women were sterilized from using a tetanus vaccine that had been provided for them by the World Health Organization about a year after Bill Gates became the largest single donor to the World Health Organization. I think it was over 40,000 children in India were paralyzed by a polio vaccine, ironically enough. These are stories that do get coverage in the countries where these people have been badly injured or worse by Gates-supplied vaccines. So the Indian press heavily reported the controversy over there. The claim by Kenyan doctors that these tetanus vaccines were causing spontaneous miscarriages among pregnant women, that got covered in Kenya. But because we live in a system of kind of media lockdown, we don't hear any of this kind of information. It doesn't get through the filters that have been set up to, you know, protect the image of multi-billionaires like Gates. So, you know, you mentioned Bernays. Bernays was one of the, you know, sort of founding geniuses of modern propaganda practice. I don't think he believed that what he was doing was particularly sinister. I think that he believed that the ills of propaganda only obtain when propaganda would be used for unethical purposes. I mean, he was a complicated and interesting figure. But the fact is that his notion of democracy is based on the assumption that we need a lofty and disinterested body of experts to provide us with the truth so that democracy can function smoothly. You know, his ideal for democratic life was an ideal of a kind of mechanical efficiency, which he believed would be enabled by this, you know, exalted body of people who know better. Well, that's we're seeing a version of that now. People like Gates, like Tony Fauci, people with actually very checkered histories, people who should arguably be arraigned for crimes against humanity of various kinds. These people are treated by the media as sages, you know, as savior figures, in no small part because they often appear to be on the other side of the argument from Donald Trump. And the thinking is, if anyone is opposed to Trump, they must be right. They must have our best interests at heart. Well, that's a very simplistic way to look at it. The fact is that propaganda works, propaganda kills, and yet, you know, there's really no such thing as any sort of national high school or college curriculum in propaganda studies, which is something I seriously believe in. I think that we need something very much like that, that kids should be taught how to tell legitimate sources from illegitimate sources, how to tell truth from lie, how to spot rhetorical devices used to sway you emotionally instead of logically. So, you know, the proof's in the pudding here. We don't know how to deal with propaganda. We can only recognize it when it's something we disagree with, right? Mm-hmm. But when propaganda tells you something that you want to hear, when it tells you something that you do fervently agree with, you don't see it as propaganda. You see it as information. You see it as journalism. You see it maybe as entertainment. It's only those nitwits who watch Fox News who fall for propaganda, but we're too smart for that. Well, that's precisely exactly how propaganda works. It works. It's most effective when it comes at you as something other than what it is, you see. So, I mean, I suppose I should say something hopeful at this point because we're coming to the end of our conversation.
I was hoping yeah. You would, yeah.
Well, I will, and I can, and it has to do with what we were just discussing. You know, one of the courses I teach every semester here at NYU is a course on propaganda. Not a how-to course, but a course on how to recognize it, how to spot it. And what really I find deeply gratifying and very promising, considering the dark times we're living through and the prospect of even greater darkness to come if we don't resist, is the fact that I find young people to be open and receptive and flexible in ways that their elders really aren't. People of college age, people in their early 20s, they're not susceptible to the conspiracy theory meme the way that our contemporaries are, you know? And because these kids grew up with the internet, you know, which has its drawbacks and so on and its problems, nevertheless, the fact that they have grown up with a medium that enables them to find the other side of the story relatively quickly and easily has made them less reverential towards media outlets like the New York Times, you know, which baby boomers, you know, liberal baby boomers tend to worship. They treat it as gospel. Younger people don't have that kind of a bias. and they're willing to open their minds to alternative narratives that would have their elders, practically gasping and keeling over, they will question the official narrative of 9/11. They will question the official narratives of the assassinations of the Kennedy brothers and Martin Luther King. And they will question the official narrative that's suffocating us today. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to have a special class by Zoom, unfortunately, where both the classes that I've taught this last semester, and they were both film courses, Steve, they weren't propaganda courses. There's such an intense interest among all those students in finding out some truth about the coronavirus crisis that they asked me to set up a special extra class where all of them could, listen to some truth about this really urgent situation, or situation, as you called it before.
Yeah. You know, that is very heartening. And, you know, what we've been living through, particularly since the Reagan years, is we've been really thrown to the lesser evil. Well, with the lesser evil, one side A can always see the evil in side B, and side B can always see the evil in side A. So when you have candidates like we had, Hillary and Trump, very, very easy to see the shadow side of either side. And now what's happening with Biden is that the progressives are being leveraged once again. My sense is, why would that woman lie, right? I looked at his face. I looked at her face. Her face didn't look like the face of a liar. His face looked like the face of a liar. And so now, once again, just as the Trump supporters had to get behind their liar, the people that don't like Trump are once again going to compromise whatever values they have to vote for somebody who is, to say the least, tainted. So this lesser evil politics is really brought down, I think, brought down the whole system.
Oh, I think that's true. And I will say that there's one thing you can say for Donald Trump, okay? And I'm a New Yorker. I've been watching this guy forever. And the fact that he's president is astonishing. And indeed, there is a great deal of very compelling evidence that he didn't actually win that election. I don't want to get off on that tangent any more than Hillary had actually won her party's nomination. 2016 was kind of the year that all of our election fraud chickens came home to roost. Bernie Sanders was the one who was the people's choice, et cetera. Being fully mindful, as I am, of Trump's many defects, I will say that he does have the advantage of being strangely honest. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. He lies every time he opens his mouth, okay? He is a pathological liar. So I don't mean honest in that sense. But he is honest in that he has sort of ripped the mask off U.S. empire. He doesn't do lip service to high ideals. He doesn't pretend to be benevolent. He's not like Obama. In other words, his is the real face of American power. In that sense, he's kind of honest, Whereas somebody like Biden, who is in many ways identical to Trump, he would want to cut Social Security. He would probably, go along with even more military adventures abroad than Trump's been willing to do, and Trump's been willing to go through too many. I actually think that there's something of an advantage in having a president who doesn't make any bones about where his interests lie and what kind of a program he's pushing. Biden will lead people to think that now we're going to, get back to the old normal of America as a benevolent power. Well, Obama's record is really a dreadful one on civil liberties, on the environment, on destabilizing governments abroad. But the fact that he was a Democrat and a person of color made people tolerate and even applaud things that if Trump did them, they would be screaming about, if you see what I mean. So there's that one aspect of Trump's brutal honesty that I think is kind of a saving grace. It certainly has mobilized a lot of people to get politically active. Unfortunately, too many of them are, you know, partisan corporate Democrats. But I think it's not entirely a bad thing to have a state whose oppressiveness is out in the open, if you see what I mean.
You know, that's exactly right. I'm so glad that you said that, Mark, because my jokey way of saying it is Donald Trump is America's balloon karma payment. You know, he represents who we've been, or to put it more grossly, as we guys from New York, we'd say, you know, Bush Cheney, that was covert skullduggery. This is overt scumbaggery, you know. But
yeah, that's right.
I want to thank you so much, Mark Crispin Miller. We'll have to have you back to talk about political correctness, a whole other issue where I think you're going to bring a lot of wisdom to us. This is Steve Hammond on WikiPolitiki. Mark, I appreciate your being with us on WikiPolitiki. We'll be back next week. Thank you.
Thank you.